This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show with Cindy Sheehan. I'm your guest host this week, John Gold. Cindy's on vacation, much needed vacation. I'm here tonight with a very special guest. His name is Dan Christensen. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during the show, and I hope you do, with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free in USA and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. Okay, so we're here tonight with Dan Christensen. How you doing tonight, Dan?
Okay, I'm fine. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. All right, I'm going to read your bio for everyone. Dan founded Florida Bulldog in 2009 using the name Broward Bulldog. He is an award-winning former investigative reporter for the Miami Herald and Daily Business Review and one of South Florida's most experienced reporters. He holds undergraduate and graduate degrees in political science from the University of Miami. Dan's stories about Broward Sheriff Ken Jen's private business dealings sparked a federal corruption investigation that landed Jenna in prison in 2007. His stories about hidden and falsified court records in Broward, Miami-Dade, and elsewhere in Florida for the Miami Herald in 2006 led to a pair of unanimous Florida Supreme Court decisions in 2007 and 2010 outlawing those practices. Similar stories for the Daily Business Review in 2003 and 2004 exposed excessive secrecy in the federal courts. The executive director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press later called Dan, quote, the nation's leading journalist on an issue of tremendous First Amendment importance, the increasing trend towards secrecy in our nation's courts, end quote. In 2001, Dan's reporting about a deadly gun planning conspiracy and cover-up by Miami police resulted in the indictment of more than a dozen officers and significant governmental reform, including the establishment of Miami's long-sought civilian review panel. So that's Dan's bio, and if you guys don't know who I am, very quickly, I've been an advocate for 9/11 justice for over 14 years now. If you want to know about me, I suggest reading my book. It's called 9/11 Truther, The Fight for Peace, Justice, and Accountability. And the foreword was written by Cindy Sheehan. If you're a student or can't afford one, email me at gold9472@comcast.net, and I will be more than happy to send you a free copy. Also, I had a show within recent years called We Were Lied To About 9/11. I had 31 shows. Right now, I'm working on having every episode transcribed so they can be placed into a new book that will be called We Were Lied To About 9/11, The Interviews. So look for that in the coming months. Okay, Dan, you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's get into this. Okay, so there was a book called The 11th Day. It was written by Anthony Summers and, oh man, the name escapes me. Swan?
Yes, that's his wife.
Okay, Swan. And in that book, there was a story that was broke about a Sarasota family, Saudi family, with ties to Muhammad Atta. Now, you're the journalist that took this further. Go ahead and tell us the story.
It actually was a little bit different than that. Tony and Robin had written this book, The 11th Day, and this was in the late summer of 2011. And I've known Tony for a long time, and they live in Ireland. Tony called me and said that, hey, we've got this book coming out, but there's this significant lead that we want to learn more about and write about. Didn't have time to get it in the book initially. It is in a second edition of the book that was done later, but in the original edition, it wasn't in there. And so he called and asked me if I'd like to help out because I'm in Florida. And I said, sure. I had not written anything about this. I've written about a lot of things, but I had not written about 9/11 before. And about 2 years before this, I had started what's now called the Florida Bulldog. And we worked on the story together. What Tony had gotten was an amazing tip from what we described as an intelligence officer, person has not been named, but we ended up doing some other interviews, and we wrote an initial story that ran both on the Bulldog site and in the Miami Herald on page one that same day. We sold them the story, and it was about this tale of the Sarasota family, the Alhiji family, who had prior to 9/11, they had lived in the Sarasota area in a place called Prestancia, which is an upscale development just south of the city. They'd been there for 4, 5, 6 years. I forget exactly how long. And he was had been a student, and they lived, at least for outward appearances, a very conservative life. His wife, his first name was Nude, dressed in, wore traditional Arab garb, and did not wear, as I understand it, just simply did not wear much Western clothing and stuff. Anyway, what makes all this quite interesting is that about, and this is the story that was told originally to Tony and then repeated to me, by this intelligence officer, was that about 2 weeks before 9/11, the family hurriedly moved out of their home and basically left behind almost all their belongings, left behind their cars, left behind clothing, left behind furniture, left food in the refrigerator, things like that. And just one day they were there, and the next day they were gone. They went back to Saudi Arabia, it turned out. And after 9/11, immediately, they law enforcement started getting calls from neighbors about this, notifying them that this Saudi family had moved out. It's interesting about the Saudi family is they have ties to the royal family, too, because the Anoud Ghazawi's father was actually the owner of the home that they were living in, and he used to work for a Saudi prince. He was an advisor to him. Anyway, we hear about this story. We start interviewing people, talk to some of the neighbors that were still there and others that could verify that the FBI had done an investigation of what was going on. We heard that they had obtained records from the gatehouse there. Those records, it's a gated community. There's a couple entrances, both of which are gated. And in order to get in, you got to get your license plate photographed and sign a login book, that sort of thing. Anyway, we were told that these records were turned over to the FBI. The FBI looked at them and found out that Muhammad Atta and some of the other 9/11 figures, their cars or vehicles, I don't know if they were all cars, were found to have gone into Prestancia and specifically to the Alhiji's residence. So we write that story. And actually, before we did, there was one other thing of significance that's occurred. We both went down and met with former Florida Senator and Governor Bob Graham, who lives in Miami. I told him about this, and he didn't know anything about it. And he was quite upset that he didn't, because obviously, he has an abiding interest in all things Florida and would have liked to know if there was an incident of this kind. Anyway, he told us they did not, so we wrote the story based on that with all those various elements in the story. And we before publication, we'd contacted the Justice Department to ask them about this, and they essentially declined comment. The next day, or a little over 24 hours later after the story came out, the FBI put out a statement saying, confirming that there had indeed been an investigation. This, at that point in 2011, it was 9 years ago, or between 9 and 10 years ago, but that it had found no connection to 9/11. And okay, so we're asking them, why? What did you find? You know, tell us. You know, explain this to us. And they wouldn't do that. So we wrote a couple of follow-up stories at the time, but the principal thing that we did was we filed a Freedom of Information Act request wanting to get the file, the FBI file on this investigation to find out why did they conclude that there was nothing to this. We were prepared to accept that if they can explain, you know, their reasons for that. But they did not. So a year goes by, they completely blow us off, said they don't have anything. And we sued in fall of 2012. And things began to get interesting about 6 months after that. I walked out to my mailbox one day, and there's an envelope from the FBI. I opened it up. There's, I think it was 35, 36 pages in there. Some were completely blanked out. There were others that had obviously been prepared and written after our stories appeared, sort of attempting to repudiate the story, saying there was nothing to all this. But there was also one very interesting document, a document that we sort of come to refer to as the smoking gun, and we wonder why it was placed in there. Senator Graham has speculated, and I tend to wonder about it too, that perhaps there was a mole inside the FBI that got this document out, because it was quite amazing. And what it said, and it was heavily redacted. Remember, backdrop on this is they said they did an investigation, but they found nothing to all this, right? Well, here we get this document. It's heavily censored for privacy, but also for reasons of national security. So why is a document that's about this investigation censored for reasons of national security if they found nothing? That's still not been explained to us. But the one thing that was clear in the document, and you can see all these documents, by the way, if you go to our website called it's floridabulldog.org, because we are a not-for-profit charity group. We rely on contributions. We post many, not necessarily everything, because there's a lot of stuff, but everything that's significant we post online, including all the documents that have been released so far. If you go back to, I think it's right around April 1st, approximately, give or take a couple of days, in 2013, you can call these documents up and see them. And they do what they call Bates numbering. That is, if you look at the bottom of the page, they were calling these at the times documents Sarasota number 1, Sarasota 2, Sarasota 3, and so on. If you look at Sarasota 5 and 6, you will see that it is this document. It's an FBI report. It was written in April 2002. A lot of information's blanked out, but there's enough there to discern that, you know, who we're talking about, and that is the Al-Hijis, even though their names have been blanked out. And what it says is that these folks had, quote, many connections, unquote, to figures involved with 9/11. And that was completely opposite, flatly contradicted what the FBI had been saying. So we've been wrestling with them pretty much ever since. And in that first FOIA case that I told you about, that's a case that is kind of been on hold for the last 3 years, because literally 3 years ago, either this month or next month, a local federal judge ordered the FBI to produce you know, records in response to our requests, and they turned over 80,000 pages, which the judge has been going through for the last 3 years to determine what might be able to be released publicly. We're not sure why it's taking this long, although it's a formidable task to go through that, you know, much material. Okay, well,
let me put this into context for people just so they understand. Sure. Bob Graham was the co-chair of the Joint Congressional Inquiry.
I should have said that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. The co-chair of the Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11, and during their investigation, he never came across any of this information. So he was obviously surprised when Dan showed it to him and so forth. We have a caller on the line. I believe it's Bill from Illinois on line two.
Have you read the filing that was issued in New York? And have you thought about the overlap in the last couple of days between that litigation and your work? And second, John, thank you for your work, too, in general. And, let's start with Dan for the moment.
Yeah, I did read the complaint. I have not read it. I read it semi-closely, but not as closely as if I was going to be reporting on it. First of all, the first 135 pages are all the names of the family members and of the dead and of the survivors, who are, I think there's 850 people. And by the way, this it was filed yesterday, I believe. Could have been the day before. It was filed on the 20th, and it's about 60 some pages long. There is some new information in here, I believe.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, and they certainly make use of the some of the information that was released over the summer in the 28 pages that got a lot of publicity, and that the Saudis sought to poo-poo as having nothing new in it. But there was new information, I'm going to be writing about it at some point, and I'll have some additional new information. But I thought this was it was interesting. What they did was. By the way, this is the third, as I understand it, this is the third lawsuit that's filed. And at some point, it will likely be consolidated with the others, at least for initial decisions. There's a lot of stuff that the judge will have to sort through in this. But they slimmed it down a bit because they just sued Saudi Arabia. They did not sue all the individual charities and things like that like they had before when they thought that they weren't going to be able to sue Saudi Arabia. So that's been cleaned up a little bit. And but all the information about the charities and what they did is in here. And one of the most interesting things is, and it's on page, because I got it in front of me, it's on page 180.
Yes, page 135 onward is where people can find this information. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go online to get it, I guess. Unless it's do you know where it's posted?
There is one New York news story that actually embedded it. And it's very hard to read because it's in a small PDF file. But if you go to the Pacer system, I guess. And anyway, go ahead.
Okay, can I just say something really fast?
Sure.
Just so people understand, yesterday a lawsuit was filed by the 9/11 family members. I believe it was 800 9/11 family members filed a lawsuit against Saudi Arabia in New York, just so we're clear about that.
Right. And like I said, this is the third such lawsuit. Because there's some people
others, but this is one of the most significant, I suspect. But go ahead.
It's certainly quite interesting. But one of the things that it mentions in here, and it mentions very briefly, okay, because it talks about these different charities. But the charity that I find the most interesting here is what was known as the Saudi High Commission on Bosnia and Herzegovina, of all things. Mm. But they talk about how all these charities funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars to Al-Qaeda in various ways and over various periods of time. This
various ways
one,
is an important point. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah. But they point out in this particular one regarding Saudi High Commission, which is on page 180, it talks about how this particular charity was headed by Prince Salman, who is now the king of Saudi Arabia. And it talks about, and I actually wrote a story about this a couple years ago, based
he
upon
was
information.
He was named in a lawsuit brought on by the family members years ago, if I remember
yes,
correct.
Yes, correct. And I had done a story identifying some of that a while back, but it's interesting that they put it in here. But they didn't, you know, they didn't make a big issue of it, but they did put it in here. But it's interesting that the current king of Saudi Arabia had his hands dirtied with all this, I think.
Well, Bill,
I think it's worthy of investigation. Dan, your work has been among, you know, it's easy to get cynical about our mainstream media and everything, but Dan, your work has been an example of what America should be proud of in terms of the Fourth of the State. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
I love that Dan is one of the only, I mean, I wish there were more, but it's great that he's a reporter that's actually covering an aspect of the cover-up of 9/11. I mean, there are a multitude of cover-ups, but he's at least covering one aspect of it, and not many journalists can say that. Bill, I want to thank you for the call. We have another caller from, I believe his name is Mark, from Georgia on line 3.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to bring up a couple things that you know, really have not received much attention. You know, I served on, you know, active duty in the Marine Corps from 95 to 99. And just before I got off active duty, the Clinton administration had inaugurated the anthrax vaccine immunization program. And I paid very careful attention to news related to that program because of my experience with those shots, ending up with subsequent health problems, that kind of thing. Well, I don't know how many of you are cognizant of this, but the person who allegedly carried out the anthrax attack pursuant to the government story, right in the FBI's Ameri-Anthrax report, Bruce Ivins, he was a scientist who worked on the, you know, anthrax vaccine for the Pentagon. And what I find to be very interesting about this is one of the targets that was hit, you know, the building in Florida is owned by a publication whose editor, his wife, rented apartments to two of the alleged hijackers. And keep in mind, this was after 9/11, you know, immediately adjacent to it, so all the alleged hijackers were dead at this point. And so there's obviously a nexus here between the anthrax attack and 9/11, and if, as the government itself says, the anthrax attack was an inside job, well, then I think we have to start asking ourselves what exactly happened on 9/11. And I think one of the biggest issues, one of the biggest anomalies is the way the National Reconnaissance Office emptied its building out as soon as, according to, I believe is the Associated Press, as soon as the real world events of 9/11 began to unfold, NRO sent all their personnel home. So it sounds to me like, objectively, they turn off our surveillance satellites, because the NRO is the one organization that could have maybe seen what hit the Pentagon, and they turn off our surveillance satellites, sending everybody at the NRO home, but nobody at the Pentagon gets this message. And so, you know, despite the FAA notifying need of incoming aircraft at least 15 minutes before the Pentagon was struck, so nobody at the Pentagon is evacuated, but they evacuate the NRO, which is the one agency that oversees our surveillance satellites. You know, like they turn our surveillance satellites
If I can get in here, you said something that I don't believe is true. I'm going to caveat this with the fact that I have not really covered, but I did read in great detail the story about the anthrax attack. It was on the National Enquirer building down here. The woman who worked there, or the guy who died, his wife, I've never seen anything that indicated that she...
No. Not his wife. Not his wife. Look this up. In fact, if you just type in, anthrax attack, wife of editor, and you might find some articles, not the wife of the guy who was killed, the editor of that publication down there, his wife rented apartments to the alleged hijackers. That is documented. You can look that up. Okay,
Mark, I appreciate the call. With regards to the anthrax attacks, there's obviously a multitude of unanswered questions concerning them. I mean, Tom Daschle himself is still not satisfied with the investigation that we had. But that's off topic, and I want to get back to Sarasota and 9/11. So go ahead, Dan. Now, in recent months, what are some of the things that we've seen concerning the Sarasota thing? You've written a couple of articles that were pretty explosive.
Yeah, well, it kind of gets back to the courts here, because I told you about the one lawsuit that led to the production by the FBI of these 80,000 pages to the judge in Fort Lauderdale to review, a federal judge in Fort Lauderdale. Last summer, we filed a second lawsuit, and that has to do with we were seeking information about the 9/11 Review Commission. And the 9/11 Review Commission was a group that was put together by the FBI. It was authorized by Congress. There was a provision dropped in a large appropriations bill, as often happens, that allowed the FBI to create this group. It was not headed by, but the senior person on it was, the senior member was Ed Meest, former Reagan-era attorney general. And they were charged with doing a couple of things. One, they were supposed to evaluate the FBI's performance post 9/11, and they were also to examine new evidence. We're interested in what they did regarding examining new evidence, because what they did was, regarding our stuff, remember I mentioned this smoking gun document that was released Yes. by the FBI to us, the April 2002 report that said there were many connections between the Sarasota Saudis and essentially the hijackers. The 9/11 Review Commission took testimony regarding them, in secret, by the way. This was not public. The 9/11 Review Commission, when its report came out in about 2 years ago this month, they said that there was that the FBI agent who wrote this particular report had done so in error, and that it was wholly unsubstantiated, the statements that he had made in there. And that there was no he could provide no basis for having written this. Now, there's no substantiation for any of that. It's simply things. So we want to get the documents that would explain why they're saying these things. And so
right.
We okay. sued.
I'm sorry, we got to take a break, Dan.
Right, sure.
We're with the People Speak Radio Show, and I'm your guest host this week, John Gold. We're here with Dan Christensen, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Come, you masters of war.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. I've been a peace activist since 2004, when my son Casey was killed in Iraq. I've learned since then that achieving peace means more than just being anti-war. It encompasses being pro-environment and pro-equality for all people of all genders, religion, and ethnicities. Please join me at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com with many other people who believe in working for a more peaceful and humane future.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hey, you're listening to the People Speak radio show with Cindy Sheehan. I'm actually your guest host this week, John Golden. We're here with Dan Christensen, journalist for the Florida Bulldog. Okay, Dan, we were talking during the break about the review commission and how it came out of nowhere, literally came out of nowhere. I was not aware of it. Many people were not aware of it. And it essentially came out to cut off all the loose threads and just put an end to this Sarasota 9/11 issue. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. It did come out of nowhere. It was even Senator Graham didn't know about it. I told him about it, and he was kind of dumbfounded, mainly because he's exactly the kind of person they should be talking to. Anyway, the way this began, and if you go onto the Florida Bulldog site, which is, again, floridabulldog.org, you can do a search for 9/11 Review Commission, go back to the first one, the second one, actually, which was a story about how this whole thing came together. And it came together, originally, it had been an idea by Representative Peter King, a Republican in New York, who's been an advocate for 9/11 victims. He wanted to have I think he was actually called the 9/11 Review Commission, and it was going to be like most national commissions, it would be public. They'd have public hearings. They would have subpoena power, and they'd do everything out in the open, or most everything, certainly. But the idea didn't get very far in Congress, and at some point it kind of got hijacked, I guess, might be the way to describe it, because that may be a little bit too strong. But essentially, the idea got taken over by a guy who's now an ex-congressman from Virginia, Frank Wolf, and along with James Comey, the FBI director, they got this thing inserted into this appropriations bill and created the 9/11 Review Commission as it actually came to be, and which was essentially an entity that was created by and controlled by the FBI. The three members were chosen by Director Comey. They were paid by the FBI salaries of about $80,000 a year each for essentially largely part-time work. And they were also sort of spoon-fed information by the FBI, and it's all quite apparent if you read the report. Certainly, if you begin to read some of the reports that we've gotten that they'd kept secret. So anyway, after they issued their report, there was no explanation. I tried to interview the commissioners. None of them would talk. One of them was a professor at Georgetown. He actually hung up on me, which I thought was rather strange. So we filed another Freedom of Information request. That was in 2015. Year goes by, they say there's nothing there. Actually, they didn't say there's nothing there. They just blew us off completely. And so we sued again in June. And since then, things have been happening. We have received a number of documents that have been released, documents, for instance, that show us how much they were paid, because they didn't tell us, they wouldn't tell us how much they were being paid. Documents that have shown that, as to my mind, the most interesting one is a document from October 2012 that shows that as late as that date, they were actively, the FBI and prosecutors in New York, were actively trying to file charges against the suspect for providing material support to the 9/11 hijackers, essentially somebody who would have been in the support network for the hijackers who were based out in San Diego, the ones who crashed into the Pentagon.
Right. That's a whole other story in itself.
My point is this, that there have been a number of very interesting disclosures that have come out as a result of this. We were hoping to go to trial earlier this month on this. The FBI, as has been their
sort of the way they've done business in this for several months now is kind of at the last minute. They'll claim they found new documents, and they'll say they need more time to be able to prepare, you know, court papers to say whatever they want to say to the judge. So the judge right. gave them a couple of more weeks. They filed as of a few days ago. Now it's our turn. We're going to be able to respond sometime sometime before the end of the month. I'm not sure where. Then the judge will decide. Let me finish that thought, if I might. Then the judge will decide whether she can make a ruling on what should become public and what shouldn't, or whether we need to go to trial and actually have live testimony from Senator Graham and others about all this.
That's something I'd love to see. With regards to disclosures, most people or a lot of people might be aware of what was called the 28 redacted pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry. There's something I want to say. When Obama first came into office, he promised 9/11 family member Kristen Brattweiser that he would look into it and release the pages. And almost 8 years later, he finally did, and he released them with 3 pages worth of redactions and so on and so forth. But very quickly, I want to send out my condolences to the Liesemann family. Dana Liesemann passed away recently, and she worked on both the joint inquiry into 9/11 and the 9/11 commission. When she tried to gain access to the 28 redacted pages, Philip Zelikow, the executive director of the 9/11 commission, blocked her access to them. So she went through a back channel to gain access to them, and Zelikow fired her for basically trying to do her job. Now, I once corresponded with her online, and I called her a hero for trying to do the right thing. So again, my condolences to her family. Sadly, this just reminds me that the further away we get from that day, the harder it will be to get to the truth. So I understand we have Bill back from Illinois on line two holding.
Hi, John. Thanks again. It's good to talk to both of you people that I consider heroes and seeking the truth and all this stuff. One question I have is regarding the 9/11 Commission's final report, where on page 172 they claim that the source of the funding was of quote, little practical significance of the fact that we don't have to follow the money. Dan, in your work, for sure, is this a valid conclusion of the final report of the 9/11 Commission?
Well, I can certainly say that the in the lawsuit that was just filed, they obviously disagree strongly with that, and they show they lay out, you know, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars that were sent. They name who got it. They name who in some cases reimbursed Saudi Arabia for it. A guy who was a known Al Qaeda financial operative named Yasin Qadi.
Who says he was friends with Dick Cheney?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yes, he did. Yasin Al-Qaeda said he was friends with Dick Cheney. Go ahead.
Okay, maybe he was. Well, we know that President Bush was very tight with Saudis. Everybody's
seen
the
pictures.
Well,
that's the thing I wanted to say. You know, they say it was of little practical significance. Well, the President of the United States' very good friend is connected to money that was given to two of the alleged hijackers. I think that's fairly significant.
I do too. And one of those, obviously, was Prince Bandar, and whose name is noticeably absent from that complaint
Correct.
That was just filed. Although there's his I can't say his fingerprints are on it, but certainly activities that tie back to him are on that. But Bandar became, I think, a real. I mean, he was always a focus of interest here. And had been since he showed up on the, you know, was photographed on the White House portico just a few days after 9/11, sort of yucking it up with the president and the vice president and Condoleezza Rice and others. But what became of great interest was
some of the stuff that came out in the 28 pages about payments that he made, payments that
directly.
His wife made. We knew about those. We didn't know about the payments he had made.
Exactly.
That it ended up to people that are right next to the hijackers. It's like, what's going on here? Now, he gave a statement to the 9/11 Commission 10 years ago about all this, a little more than 10 years ago now. Classified, remains classified.
I was just going to say that. There's something called a memoranda for the record, which is basically a description of an interview that the staff gave with a witness. And Bandar's memorandum for the record is classified. We're not allowed
but
to see that.
It ain't for our record. See, that's what I saw with this 9/11 Review Commission. They always call these things memorandums for the record. Well, whose record? Because it's not the public record, because they're hiding all this stuff. You know?
Exactly.
We should be able to see what Bandar had to say.
That's something people need to know, is the fact that, you know, a lot of people made a big deal about the 28 redacted pages not being released from the Joint Congressional Inquiry. There are a multitude of documents from the 9/11 Commission that have yet to be released, and a lot of the documents that have been released are redacted. So, you know, we're back to square one in a lot of cases.
Well, I will tell you this, that I am aware of moves in Congress to try and push for the opening up of these documents. Whether they'll reach fruition, whether they'll be successful, I don't know. But it ain't over.
No, it's not. And I understand Bill's line is having an issue. Or Bill, are you still there?
Yes.
You have anything to say to either me or Dan?
I would appreciate the fact that you guys are still working hard on this. And Dan, in light of the work that you've done, it's very curious that we've had a lack of investigation into the questions that you have had from official areas. And what your work has done at the Florida Bulldog has been a celebration of the Fourth Estate and what it should provide for America. And so is John in his own way in developing a clearinghouse for information. But I appreciate both of your work. And I'll
John has done that, and I think that that's very important. As for why, you know, the other reporters aren't working on this, you got me. I just don't understand it.
With regards to the lawsuit, thank you very much, Bill, by the way. With regards to the lawsuit that was set into motion yesterday, here's a news report from the Belfast Telegraph. Quote, Mr. Falih, a Saudi, told the newspaper the kingdom believes that after, quote, due consideration by the new Congress and the new administration, that corrective measures will be taken, end quote, though he did not elaborate on what the measures would be. With regards to JASTA, which was the bill that was passed at the end of last year, it's called the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. Now the Saudis are saying they believe that government is going to correct them so that the Saudis are safe, but we'll see. Before we end, or if you want to talk about something else, I want to read something really quick. The September 11th advocates yesterday released a statement pertaining to the lawsuit that was launched, and I wanted to read that for people. Just so people know, the September 11th advocates are Lori Van Alken, Kristen Brautweiser, Patty Casaza, Mindy Kleinberg, Monica Gabriel. Four of them were known as the Jersey Girls, and they were greatly responsible, or essentially responsible, for the creation of the 9/11 Commission. They released a statement yesterday, and it's Statement of September 11th Advocates Regarding 9/11 Saudi Lawsuit, March 20th, 2017. After waiting nearly 16 years to hold the alleged murderers of our husbands accountable, we will finally have our long-awaited and hard-fought day in court. No one should ever get away with murder, most especially the mass murder by terrorism of 3,000 innocent people on American soil. We look forward to the transparency and accountability that will be provided by the discovery process. In addition, we look forward to testimony being given in open federal court so that all of the information surrounding the 9/11 attacks can be brought to light and heard by the American public. We hope that the court will go wherever the facts may lead. More than anything, we hope that after being held accountable for their role in the 9/11 attacks, nations like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and others will no longer support, condone, or turn a blind eye to mass murder by terrorism that targets and kills innocent Americans. This is not about money. This is about bringing 9/11 into a courtroom so they can have the discovery process, so they can subpoena people and call witnesses to testify and have all these kinds of things that you're never going to find at Gitmo. Now, I understand we have another caller, Joe from New York on line three. Hi, Joe.
I am enjoying your show. This is the first time John, I follow you on Facebook, but I have not heard you on the air before, and I just discovered Dan today. So I was personally affected by 9/11. I commuted through the World Trade Center every day for 8 years, as millions of other people did, including the day of the 93 terrorist bombing. And I've been, you know, following. I appreciate everything that you guys do. It sounds like you guys you follow this. You know, it's every single day. And I have to say, I'm learning a lot. About the incident by listening, but I have not followed it day in and day out the way that you folks did. But I was interested in what you were saying about finding out the truth, and I did know that this 28 pages is just the tip of the iceberg for the documents. And sure, if you could talk more about the work that's being done to in Congress to expose more of these pages, any idea how, you know, I find sometimes in history that the truth usually, I hope, the truth usually comes out, but I don't, you know, you were saying about how the farther you get away, the harder it gets, and I think sometimes it does take decades or sometimes even centuries before we find out, future Americans find out what really happened. Who in Congress is friendliest right now to the cause of getting the truth out there, and, you know, what do you think can be done? Who would you say are your allies that might work toward getting it released, more pages, more information released sooner rather than later?
Well, there are a couple. I mean, the sponsors of the legislation to, we at the Florida Bulldog had filed a similar lawsuit about 3 years ago to try and get the 28 pages opened up. And we got, we got blown off by the FBI. We got blown off by the Justice Department. It then goes to something called the Interagency Security Classification Appeals Panel, and they move at a glacial pace. Over the summer, President Obama intervened in that process, and that's how those documents got opened up. But the sponsors of legislation, there was Representative Walter Jones and Representative, the guy from Massachusetts, John, help me out here.
Oh, don't do that to me. I don't remember his
name. He's a fine gentleman, and I'm blanking on his name.
I guess it would be the people, because I did see, going back a while back, they had the press conference. I did know Walter Jones was one, I think, in the Senate. Rand
Stephen
Paul,
Lynch.
And if I'm not mistaken, Thomas Massie in the House.
Correct. Yes, he was involved as well.
Yeah. And I was just wondering if you're getting the feeling, I mean, is it in Congress, now that the 28 pages is out, is that the end of it, or have you heard from these same congressmen that, you know, we're pushing for more, what's the process?
I remember the name Stephen Lynch is the congressman from and Lynch is a Democrat, Walter Jones is a Republican, so this is a bipartisan effort, but there's, from what I can gather, and I'm down in Florida, but people I talk to, it seems like they're still fill the hunger, I guess, for lack of a better word, to try and get more information about this out. Everybody knows that we do not know everything that happened. And I think there's a lot of people that believe, including people in Congress, who believe we should know what happened, that we have a right to know what happened. And I think that right trumps the rights of privacy and things like that. I mean, for instance, in some of the documents that have been released to us, the FBI cites privacy. They won't release the names of FBI agents, okay, who worked on the case, saying their lives could be in danger or something, which is a crock. They're not in danger. And other people that are involved. If these sort of standards had been applied 50 years ago, during when the Warren Commission was at work, a lot of the information that came out would simply not have come out because it would have all been censored. But since then, they create the privacy laws and stuff, and they're applied in these, frankly, what I think to be a ridiculous ways. They're used not to protect the privacy of legitimate individuals, but to protect. Yeah. Cover their ass, frankly.
Exactly. They're there to cover their ass. Matter of national security means I want to cover my ass, basically. Yeah.
By the way, we had a story the other day because we were trying to get information. We got this one document, and it was about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And there was all this stuff in it that was withheld for reasons to protect the man's privacy. I mean, they're holding him incommunicado down in Guantanamo Bay, but they're protecting his privacy. The most absurd thing you ever heard.
Unbelievable.
Huh.
The show's about to wrap up soon. I'm sorry, go ahead. Are you still there, Joe?
Yes. I was just wondering if, as far as the part that redacted, I was really outraged to hear this about, I guess it's Prince Bandar.
Yes.
The fact that his testimony is still classified. I take it that's the president of the United States is the key person to get that. Can Congress declassify that, or is that up to the executive?
Well, do you want to hear an interesting story about the president and Bandar? During the time of the 9/11 Commission, when George Bush and Dick Cheney testified together, not in public, not under oath, with no recordings or transcripts allowed in the White House, John Lehman asked Bush specifically about Bandar and 9/11, and do you want to know what Bush did? He, quote, dodged the questions, end quote.
Huh.
I don't – what qualifies
this? As to your question as to who can open that up, Congress, I would think, could. They authorized the creation of the 9/11 Commission. The president, I would assume, could do that if he wanted to.
But the thing that's missing is pressure from the people.
Yes, you're right.
Right. Yeah, so just more pressure. I mean, we did get the 28 pages and they redacted it. So we're looking both to get more documents released and to get the redacted pages unredacted. And I was just wondering really where the buck stops, if it stops. You figure it's one branch or the other. I would think it would be the president. Things that are classified, that's up to the president. And tomorrow, he could declassify anything that he wants to declassify, I would think.
I'm not quite sure.
He has wide authority. Whether he has complete, I don't know.
Joe, we're going to have to let you go because the show's coming to an end. But thanks for the call.
I wasn't sure how long. Thanks. Yep.
All right. Dan, is there anything that you wanted to share tonight, promote?
No, just that no. Well, I mean, hey, the Bulldog site, I appreciate that. We are a 501c3 organization. That's essentially we're a charity case, and we survive on contributions. We disclose who we get our money from. So if you go on a website and you look under contributors, you can see who gives us money each year. We have several big contributors. One is a guy named Michael Connolly. If you read crime novels, crime suspense novels, Michael's at the top of the bestseller list all the time. He's got a show on Amazon called Bosch that's excellent, and he's been a big supporter of the Bulldog. Matter of fact, we couldn't really do this without his help. But if you're so inclined, you can help us out. You can do it on the website or send us a check. to the post office box listed on our website.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you very much for taking the time tonight. I want to promote again the fact that I'm coming out with a new book. We were lied to about 9/11, the interviews. We're working on that now. Hopefully, maybe I'll get it out by the anniversary. But that's all for you guys, because a lot of people have requested transcripts of those interviews, because they were very good interviews with very good, knowledgeable, credible people. All right, Dan, thank you very much. You've been listening
thank
to the
John.
People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. I'm your guest host, John Gold. I'd like to thank Dan and remind you to visit their website, which is what, Dan? FloridaBulldog.com.
FloridaBulldog.org, O-R-G.
Oh. .org, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So go ahead, check out his website, give him some money so he can continue to do the good work that he does. And be
tax
sure to tune in next week.
Add.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan. What?
Tax deductible.
Be sure to tune in next week so you can listen in to Cindy Sheehan and see who she's talking to. And thanks to Cindy for giving me this opportunity. And thanks to Mike and Donald for doing what they do.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.